Now we call upon our brother Levi Gelino to give us the word of exhortation.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, everybody. I figured we'd use two readings because, as Uncle Roger Lewis says, God has given us two hands so we can compare two scriptures. So, for most of my teenage years, I've been jogging to stay fit. I started around 13 and 14, and I always loved it because the exercise is good, and it gives me time to really clear my mind. So I've been running for a long time. And in the summer of 2005, Dad challenged me to run a marathon with him. And we decided that to make it something to look forward to, we'd go to one that's not Los Angeles. So we picked Chicago, and we were going to run the Chicago Marathon in October 2006. So that's over a year away. And I said, okay, like, I doubt he'll really do that. He says a lot of things that he doesn't do, so... So I accepted, but it turned out that Dad took it real seriously. So he started training, and so I started training in April of 2006. And so today I'm going to talk about, I'm going to tell you the whole story of running the marathon, the preparation it took, and what it was like. And there's just a bunch of spiritual lessons that were really, really, really shown to me in the process of running the marathon. So I'm going to talk about that today. We'll talk about preparation and diligence. We're going to talk about the power of friends. We'll talk about the power of motivation. And I'm going to end relating to our emblems and talking about the power of the grace that God has given us. I think it's a particularly powerful lesson for all of us, a marathon, because it's very much what our, we even call our life spiritually as our spiritual walk. And at some points, I was walking. So I think all of us are on a marathon of sorts. A marathon is 26.2 miles long. It's the distance between the town of Marathon and Rome in Italy from the original Olympics. They called it a marathon because you ran from Marathon to Rome. So when I realized it was 26.2 miles, I knew it, there was going to be a lot of preparation, because I've always just only ran 2 miles. And to give you an idea, if you were going to run 26.2 miles, that'd be if you just left here and you ran to Malibu. That's roughly how far it is. So my training began in April, and we'd bought like a guidebook, like a little training guide. They told us day to day how much we should run or how much we should rest or what stretches to do, I could pick what pace I was going to take, and it told me what miles to run for like 6 months before. By the end of August of 2006, so only 2 months before, I'd only ran 9 miles at the most, and only 6 comfortably. So I was well behind, and my pace was not as good as I was hoping to be, but because I never really took pace, I was more just like, all right, I left it this time, and I got back at this time, so every mile must have been the same. But they weren't. So, but I figured I was close enough. And training was hard, too. I mean, through the summer, it was ridiculously hot, especially last summer. So it meant I'd have to wake up really early to beat the heat. And it just meant being sore all day and hating waking up in the morning. And in the fall, it meant my Saturdays were gone, too, because, again, I'd have to wake up early and I'd run anywhere between 9 and 20 miles. And that's a... that's hours out of your day. But our lives as followers are kind of the same way. Our lives as followers of Christ, our life can seem kind of mundane or annoying sometimes. And sometimes it's hard. It's just hard to wake up early. I mean, not in the summer, but some of us hate waking up early on Sundays in the fall. And that's what it's like. If we need to pay close attention to the little things that we do in our lives. I mean, You can't fall off pace. Like, this is, training is something that we do all the time. It means focusing when we don't want to and doing things that seem, annoying or a lot of times feels like it's unnecessary in the big picture. That's what I would do when I was training. It was like, well, I can skip today. You know, I'll just, you know, get back on it tomorrow, or whatever. But as believers, everything is necessary in the big picture. And when you're training for the marathon, it's the same thing. Come with me to 2 Peter chapter 3. Second Peter chapter 3, and I'll start at verse 13. Second Peter chapter 3, verse 13. But according to his promise, we are waiting for new heavens and a new earth, which righteousness dwells. Therefore, beloved, since you are waiting for these, be diligent to be found by him without spot or blemish and at peace. There's a lot in training that helped me realize how diligent we have to be as believers, how you can't just skip a day or you can't fall behind, and you really need to pay attention to your pace or how fast you're going. Training for a marathon helped me really realize that showing God's love does not always mean doing glorious things. It doesn't mean that you just have to, you know, go all out one day a week. It means that you have to live, you know, in training and work at it every day. So after ramping up my training and preparing, and eventually I got to the point where I felt like I was ready, luckily before the marathon started, it came to the weekend that Dad and I had to fly out. So we got to Chicago and we were pretty excited. It was the whole city was all, you know, there was a big sign on the buildings, and night before the race, we were in a hotel and I had all kinds of nervous dreams, like I woke up and I didn't have any legs, and I woke up and it was noon and I'd missed it, and just all kinds of things like that. And Dad woke up early because he was going to walk it. So he left really early in the morning. And when I woke up, I was alone. And it was a really weird sensation because everyone that was staying in the city was running the marathon. So I woke up and I got out of the hotel, and you get in the elevator and there's five other people that are running the marathon. We're all dressed up in our running clothes, and you go down the elevator and you get out and you walk around. And as you're walking through the streets, just tons of people, hundreds of people are walking to the same place you are. So it was really weird. It was real. It was nice because it was pretty distracting. I wasn't really thinking about the race. I was thinking about how weird it was that you're here at 7:30 in the morning and there's all kinds of people doing the same thing as you are. And I got to the starting line, and there's 35,000 people about, which is the most people I've ever seen or been a part of when you're standing in a big crowd. And it was announced that we were going to start, and it took me literally 15 minutes to get past the starting line, because everyone just walks until they get to the starting line, and then they start running, and 35,000 people have to do that, so it took a long time. And even surrounded by all these, like, you know, it was kind of an out-of-body experience, like, you know, you don't really do any of this ever, and I didn't really know what was going on. I got a text message from one of my friends from California, and it was, you know, at 8 a.m., Central Time meant 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning, Pacific Time, and someone had woken up early to text me and tell me good luck and wish me good luck, I guess, on the race. And I thought that was one of the most powerful things, and suddenly all my trepidation and fear had kind of left, because here I am in this weird place, but you know, and someone knew what I was doing and had cared enough to wake up and just send me that little text message on my phone. And when that happened, I knew I was ready. I knew that if I had someone who believed in me, like, I could definitely get started. And my friends really helped me through the whole race. I ended up getting 5 text messages through the whole race, and it was convenient because every time I looked at my phone, there was a new one. It was really, really nice how it all worked out, and they were staggered like that. It was extra powerful to me because, like, the power of friendship is unmatched. You know, those little text messages make me feel like I wasn't alone, because, you know, Dad was way ahead, and I was all there in a crowd of people I didn't know, but I wasn't alone. And it's true that we're all running this race together. You know, we all have the ability to lift each other up, and we can build each other up as we press toward that mark that Philippians talked about. And look in Hebrews chapter 12. In Hebrews chapter 12, it talks about the crowd of people that we're with when we're running our race. Hebrews chapter 12 follows right after Hebrews chapter 11, which has all those examples of faith. And then in verse 1 it says, "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for joy that was set before him endured the cross, despised the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God." We all have that same motivation, and we're all running the same race with each other. And it's never been more practically explained to me than when I was on that finish line, because I felt like I was alone, but I found out that I wasn't. I wasn't alone running that race. So I started, and I was feeling pretty strong, but even though the weather was real cold, I felt like I was ready. I was really ready. So I got started. And the first mile flew by. Before I knew it, I was passing mile 7, which is a quarter of the way, and I was having a great time. I was feeling great. I was really feeling strong, and the crowd was all into it. And it's a cool atmosphere, because when you're running along, there's people that line the streets the whole way, and they're rooting you on. And what I figured out then is a lot of people who've run marathons before wear big name tags so people can say, like, "Go you." And I didn't have any name tag, but I wore shorts that said Vermont on them. So people would say, "Go Vermont." It was really cool, because you also get a really slow tour of the city. So you're running through Chicago, and you see, like, we pass, like, where the Chicago Cubs play, and you get, like, 5 minutes to look at it, because you're moving real slow looking at it. And once I got to mile 12, it was still real good. And we get mile 12, and just about to the halfway point, I had to start really thinking about my motivations, because, you know, the fun had started to wear off. So the thing about it is, Everyone runs with a real strong motivation. There's all kinds of clubs. Like, people will say, like, "I'm running this for my spouse," or, like, "My cousin has cancer and I'm running this for them." And there's these teams. Like, they all wear the same jersey, and they're all running it for the same cause. And I had been running it to support Dad, because he'd made a new commitment to losing weight, and I really wanted to help him and be there for him. And what happened then, around the halfway point, is I got a call from Dad, and he hadn't finished. He'd stopped. It was bad, because our route passed the hotel, and it was the coldest. It was so cold. It was so cold. So Dad saw the hotel and just walked right in. So that shook me, because what was I running it for if Dad didn't finish? So I had to really think about that, and I realized that more than anything, I really wanted to finish, and that was my biggest motivation. I wanted to come home having finished. I wanted to finish the race. I didn't want to have spent so many months preparing and not have finished. And really, finishing should be our number one goal in our race towards the kingdom. Come with me to 1 Corinthians 9. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. First Corinthians chapter 9, we'll start at verse 24. "Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Therefore, I do not run like a man running aimlessly. I do not fight like a man beating the air. No, I beat my body and make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize." We can have lots of other motivations in life. We can have lots of other motivations for coming here. You know, we care about what other people think, or we care about, you know, what our family feels. But our real motivation in everything that we do is to please our Father and to gain that prize. So I'd reassessed my motivation, and I figured, well, I'm really doing this to finish. But even with that renewed motivation in my mind, the rest of the race got harder and harder. And what was real bad is the weather actually got worse as the day went on. I crossed the starting line at 40 degrees, but by mile 20, it had dropped to 32 degrees. and the clouds had come over and covered the sun. This was cold weather that you can't even train for that here. You know, I had no way to prepare for 32 degree weather. I would stop running and walk a little bit, and my entire back would seize up, my entire lower back. My lower back has always been the weakest part of my body. It's the part that hurts whenever I exercise. But these were new muscles I'd never even felt these before, and they were freezing up, and I'd have to stretch out before I ever started running again. So I would stop to walk and then stretch out and then start running again. And the wind started, and it was just the coldest thing I've ever experienced in my life. I even felt raindrops start falling, but luckily that didn't catch on. All I could do was step one foot in front of the other and try to think about things to distract myself from the pain I was feeling in my back. I began to think about my angel and what he was thinking right now. I thought about the kingdom. I thought about what I was going to eat when I got to the finish line. I thought about my family, and then I even thought about my ecclesia, because this was roughly 11:30 or noon, and with the time change, I knew that you were all meeting here for a memorial service. So I got to mile 22, and the course made its last turn, and you turn, and there's 4 straight miles on 1 straight street to the finish line in Chicago, and the worst part was the wind was actually turned, and it was to my face, so I was running against this wind in 32-degree weather. And they say that when you're running marathons for your first time, your body reacts to the amount of, like, jarring and abuse and shaking that it's happening, and you become real emotional. I started crying for things that I'd never cried before in my life, like, just any reason. Like, I saw, like, trash on the ground. I was like, oh, that's so sad. And I was bawling and bawling, and there was... So my tears were all over my face, and I was in so much pain, and I was running is, I mean, you couldn't call it running. I was more falling the whole way. And still 4 miles away, and the wind was to my face, and Dad didn't finish, so it would have been okay if I had quit. And there was just no way in my mind that I could finish. You know, I knew I was just right there, and you could see the big buildings 4 miles away, because we're still in the suburbs. You're kind of going back to the downtown. You can see the big buildings. And I said, well, you know, maybe I can get there. And I just kept taking a step and another step. There was just no way I could finish. So I started to pray. It wasn't silent. I started an open conversation, just talking out loud. And this is when I learned the greatest lesson from the marathon that I want to share with you. We can't do anything without God, anything at all. And without the grace that he has shown us, like these emblems here represent, by the sacrifice of his son. I knew that if I finished, it wasn't going to be by the strength of my legs at all. They were done. There was no strength left in them. And I knew that if I finished, it wasn't because I was some mentally strong person who could just stomach the pain I was feeling, because that was crushing me. The pain had conquered my mind a few miles ago. All I knew was Philippians 4:13, which says, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. I knew that God had given me everything in life, everything that I ever had. And if I had faith and just kept stepping forward, I would cross that finish line at some point. And there's the medal. I finished in 6 hours, 12 minutes, and 13 seconds. I was aiming for 4 hours and 45 minutes, or 5 hours, but the cold and everything totally threw that off. I came in 32,622nd place. But the real beautiful thing about this medal is that first place got the same one. I finished the race. I hope that for all of us, everyone here, I hope that we will all finish the race. So I'm going to finish with a reading from Isaiah chapter 40. Isaiah chapter 40, we'll start at verse 25. To whom then will you compare me that I should be like him, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high and see who created these. He who brings out their hosts by number, calling them all by name, by the greatness of his might, and because he is strong in power, not one is missing. Why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and my right is disregarded by my God? Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the faint, and to him who has no might he increases strength. Even youths shall faint and be weary, and young men shall fall exhausted. But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not be faint.